better off.
Hello, listeners. We are back in your feed. Welcome to the very first off-season edition of A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 28 of the show. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week, like I am every week, by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
Off-season is usually slow as far as news goes, but the Mets are one of eight teams looking for a new manager, as it turns out. We were just chatting before the show, and we were trying to remember like when Mickey Callaway got fired relative to our podcast airing last time, and I think it was like the day before, if not the same day. So since we recorded last, Mickey Callaway has indeed been fired. I guess, yay. I guess I can celebrate that.
It was time.
I can't exactly celebrate like a dude losing his job, but I'm glad that that is what happened. And I hope he gets a totally different job.
Yeah. He can be someone's pitching coach. In fact, rumor has it that he may ultimately be the Phillies pitching coach.
That's the kind of thing that scares me. Like, yeah. That is some Mets, like, whatever the opposite of devil magic is, devil evil. Like, that would so happen to the Mets that he goes and, like, all of a sudden Vince Velasquez or something, it has, like, a 1.2 ERA.
Zach Eflin, 2020 Cy Young Award winner. No. Book it now, folks.
God damn it. Don't put that out in the world.
No. I'm on record.
Although, does he really want to work with Arrieta? Arrieta's kind of, I don't know how to say this nicely.
Not nice?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's not like, a nice person.
Lots of them aren't nice, but Arrieta used to be... I can't imagine there is a former pitching coach on the planet who wouldn't want to try to fix Jake Arrieta. That sounds like, for those who do that, a super fun job.
Yeah and Nola had a bad year.
Yeah
I'm telling you, man, that's what scares me. I feel like there's some good arms over there that could just take off.
Yeah, they could just pop off and everyone would be like, Mickey the genius.
God,
plus their whole like entire bullpen was hurt. So yeah. If they actually had like a semblance of a bullpen, like, the Phillies could be dangerous next year.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the Phillies will go full galaxy brain and hire him as their manager.
That would be wild.
I would be actually A-okay with that.
Yeah, like, same.
So the like Phillies, bye.
Yeah, who would be the guy he would leave in to pinch to Pete Alonso like he did Bryce Harper, like Zamora... had to face Bryce Harper.
Oh, who, man, like,
who would be the guy he would leave to get Pete Alonso out?
Who's
nobody
that,
knows the name of that guy.
Who's that guy that the Mets scored all those runs off of on, like, when Todd Frazier hit the two home runs? That guy.
Yes.
Jared Hughes.
Oh, yes.
That guy. That's calling it now.
And he would say, oh, I had to get, like, Paul Sewald out of the game.
Yeah. Oh man, galaxy
brain. That
would
be fun.
But yeah, it was time to go, Mickey. I know, man. He made so many bad choices, and not only did he make bad choices, he seemed to truly, in his heart, believe that they were good choices, and that was what was more concerning than anything.
Yeah, mistakes were made.
Yeah, what was the thing he said, like, oh, 10 out of 10 times I'd do that again, even though
he
it blew up.
That. Yes.
I can't
and he also
remember
said
what it was.
85% of the things that I do are probably against analytics.
Oh.
Is another thing he said.
Yeah.
It's not great.
It's just not great. They're a whole collection of things. I did a post-mortem for Baseball Prospectus, and Maggie did the post-mortem for Mason Avenue, and we ended up with almost the exact same title because we have the same brain now.
And, like, also, when we looked at read, it was a really good article. You should absolutely read it. We had a lot of these same basic theses supporting this almost exact title. But yeah, that was good times.
Yes, everybody read both the articles.
Yep. So if you want to get a post-mortem on Mickey Callaway's tenure as Mets manager, heads up, it's not great, as I'm sure all of you know. Read Maggie's piece over at Amazing Avenue and then my piece over at Baseball Prospectus. We both reviewed the good, the bad, and the ugly, and there was a lot of the latter too. But, you know.
And we each squeezed in one last Tony Basil reference.
Yes.
For the road.
Yep. As you do. So the Mets are now one of the eight teams, like I said, searching for a new manager, including the Phillies now. And so now Gabe Kapler is a free agent.
Nope.
No, pass. No hard coconut pass. Oil near my team. Thanks.
That had disaster written over it from the start.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the Mets have already confirmed four people that they are going to interview in person as of this recording on October 10th, Thursday evening. Yes, we are recording on a Thursday. It's very random. You guys probably won't get this in your feeds until next week, but we had a little bit of a scheduling snafu this week, one week into the off season, and we are already not in the best shape of our lives, but don't worry. We will get back on a regular rotation in no
don't
time.
Don't worry, Allison. I haven't been in the best shape of my life in a really long time. Like, that's not even...
Yeah, man.
Don't wait up.
So since there will be like a greater than usual delay between us recording and the podcast actually going up, apologies for any intervening developments in the managerial search between now and then. But as of this recording on Thursday night, the Mets will interview Joe Girardi, Carlos Beltran, Mike Bell, and Derek Shelton, who is the latest addition to that list, are all interviewing in person. I mean, you guys know who Joe Girardi is, obviously, managed the Yankees for 10 seasons and then was kind of, surprisingly fired despite enormous success. But, I think when it comes to the Yankees, they have a different standard for what they call success. And I guess only one World Series championship was not enough for them, despite many playoff appearances, despite like a record that was ultimately 200 games over 500 for those 10 seasons or something like that.
Yowza.
And he was good with the Marlins, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I always got the vibe it was more of a, like, we just kind of want to change things up a bit than, like, an out-and-out firing. Like, 10 years is a long time.
And Cashman even gave him an endorsement, and that was his boss. So it's not like there's any animosity there.
Yeah, it seemed like, this was a couple years ago now, so it could be that my memory is failing me. But it seems like there was, some, like... Just like it wasn't even animosity, but it was like just disagreements with the front office over the future direction of the team. And so just like they weren't seeing eye to eye on certain things. And so they were kind of just like, we're going to go in a new direction. That's obviously I think that, most people probably feel he's the front runner for the job at this point. He's made it no secret that he wants to manage again. He obviously has ample experience managing, not only managing, but managing in New York, dealing with the New York media, something that obviously Mickey Callaway proved himself to be very not adept at.
And the National League, too.
Yes, yes. And even though he spent his most recent tenure and his longest tenure with the Yankees, he has experience in the National League. So it's not like he doesn't know what a double switch is. We won't have to experience that again, hopefully. So I think that he's like the most obvious candidate of these that we are interviewing. However, it did come out today. Well, we already knew going into today that he was also interviewing for the vacant Cubs position. The Cubs have moved on from Joe Maddon. That's kind of a similar situation when the Yankees moved on from Joe Girardi. That was kind of like a parting of ways more than a firing. But he interviewed for the Cubs job today, and apparently it lasted 8 hours, according to people on Twitter.com. I forget who reported that. I think
I saw that too. Yeah,
this is Puma? Way too long.
Yeah, no,
Mike
thank
Puma
you.
Of the Post reported that.
God, who wants to talk to any human being for 8 hours straight?
I know, right? Jeez.
Like, was there a nap involved?
I hope so. I hope there were snacks.
Yeah, I actually, I bet there was some pretty baller food, and I would love to hear about it. Why yeah. doesn't anybody ever, like, okay, 8 hours, whatever, but what did they eat?
Yeah, Joe, we want you to come on the pod, whether you end up manager or not, so you can tell us about the food from the interviews. We want to know about that. That's the most important.
That's yes. I mean, that's how you knew right off the bat that Curtis Granderson was somebody special, because mm-hmm. he made sure that we all knew that he had salmon, and that's
salmon
wonderful.
Salmon dinner.
Yep, that's what won him over.
Yep. So yeah, that lasted 8 hours. So I don't know that, who knows, that probably means it went well, but like, maybe, I mean, just to win the back pages, maybe the Wilpons will interview him for 10 hours. Who knows? Anyway, he's due to have an interview. Carlos Beltran is due to have an interview. Mets fans need no introduction to Carlos Beltran, obviously, former Met. All-time great Met. However, you know, there's a certain segment of the fan base that will be forever bitter and be forever hashtag blaming Beltran for things. And
I'm a little worried about, I think he's really smart and good at the baseball things. I just, this franchise is such a clusterfuck that I feel like I would rather him get some practice someplace else.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have this bad feeling that it's just gonna go badly because everything goes badly with the Mets, and I don't want that to mar Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, my brain says no, but my heart says yes.
Yeah,
and I think Donovan Mitchell, who plays for the Utah Jazz and is a big Met fan because his dad works for the organization, he had a good point that he doesn't want Beltran as a coach because then you always end up hating the coach, and he doesn't want that. Like, he doesn't want to end up hating Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way.
People either feel that way or they already hate him. Those are the two modes of Met fans.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, okay. His exact tweet was, because he was responding to another tweet saying Beltran was scapegoated and underappreciated. Let him find redemption as a Mets manager. So he responded, I agree. He was super underappreciated. But if things don't go right with him as manager, people will be quick to hate him more. And I don't want to see that happen because he is truly a Mets legend.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's a good take. I mean,
yeah.
I'm kind of like, I don't know, like I said, my heart is kind of overruling my head here, even though my brain knows that that's a good take, and I agree. My heart is like, I want Carlos Beltran to lead the Mets to a World Series.
Wouldn't that be perfect, though?
It'd be very good. And then the Mets would have to retire his number. They desperately don't want to, but they would have to.
And because of the existence of fans that hate him, they will always be able to get away with not doing it unless...
Yep. Unless he's a hero as a manager. But, you know, like you said, Maggie, it's kind of like pushing a little kid into the deep end without floaties when when you have no managerial experience and suddenly you have to manage the Mets of all teams. So I think that Beltran would be a really good fit for this clubhouse, though. But I think that, like, having someone like more experienced, like Girardi at the helm with Beltran as a bench coach would be like really awesome in like an ideal situation. I just don't know if Beltran would take that gig. I think he wants to manage.
Yeah.
Which I would understand.
And he deserves a shot at it. Like, he clearly, like, people around baseball, like, he's immensely well regarded around baseball, not just in like, not just among the, you know, less bitter Mets fans among us. He's, you know, immensely well regarded. Like, people think he's really smart, and I think that he would make a good manager. It's just that, I don't know, you know, all the past baggage with the Mets organization and the media circus that he's already dealt with, it's just, it kind of adds an extra element to it. That's kind of like,
But it also is kind of, I don't want to say hopeful, because hope with the Mets is always a dangerous thing, but it seems that they're at least... Like, the names that have popped up, Mike Bell was random, but it seems like they're at least approaching this in a smart way, that they're not just looking for retreads, which we were afraid what was going to happen with Mickey Callaway. Not that it worked out, but at least they tried something different. And he
yeah.
did, and he did end up with a winning record, which
yeah.
I appreciate the thoughts that went into the process.
Yeah, so at least they're trying, not just like Joe Madden, like, or yeah. Dusty Baker, or, you know, at least they're, you know, at least open to pursuing Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, and the other two candidates that haven't gotten as much press but have come up are also, I would say, less conventional choices.
Yeah.
Neither of them have, you know, like, managerial experience, but Derek Shelton has coaching experience. He's the current Twins bench coach. And he's like an intriguing choice. You know, he's been part of this Twins team that, I mean, obviously, you know, they ran into the Yankees juggernaut yet again and the curse lives on, but they were a 100 plus win team this season and he was a part of that. Mike Bell is head of Diamondbacks player development. So he's kind of comes more from the player development side, which might be an interesting like perspective to have in a manager. I do fear though with these two, I don't know how much of it is the Mets being like, oh, we're thinking out of the box, and how much of it is the Mets being like, we want yes men, because these people aren't going to be strong-willed like someone like Girardi, who has a ton of experience and will want independence in his clubhouse. We're just going to hire these dudes who will just, like, do whatever the Wilpons tell them to do.
Yeah, that's always my biggest fear, is that they aren't open. I don't want to say open to new ideas, but they seem to think they know better than everybody else and kind of don't want to hear arguments against it. And that's usually what they want is usually exactly what you shouldn't want, because they're so behind everybody else. But I don't know. So I don't know if bringing in somebody new is bringing in new ideas or just somebody who will implement their ideas.
Well, there's also, I mean, the problem now is that 8 different clubs are looking for new managers.
Yep.
And it's not like the 8 that have just been fired are just gonna like rotate a little bit. Like it's gonna get kind of complicated, and the Mets are going to have to appeal to candidates as an organization and not just as an opportunity to manage, because there's a million opportunities to manage right now, and they just have to come up with a better offer, whether that's financial or workplace related or whatever it is. Like, the Mets actually have to really draw somebody, and I don't know how well they do that.
Like, I can kind of see both sides of the argument here, because the Wilpons' reputation precedes them, but at the same time, the Mets have a promising team, so any candidate I guess would have to weigh the pros and cons. Like, do I want to manage a fun, kind of young, up-and-coming team, or do I want to be somewhere where I'm always micromanaged? So, I mean, they do have some appeal to them, but then there's also that elephant in the room always.
Yeah, the Mets have, like, as clubhouses go, like, right now, this mix of guys they have is a pretty easy clubhouse to deal with.
Yeah.
Not to say they don't have big personalities in that clubhouse, but, like, they don't have...
Low drama.
Yeah, it's, like, pretty low drama. Like, the major drama that was created last season was created by two individuals who are both gone now. So,
yeah.
You know.
Although everybody's still trying to stir up this, like, Syndergaard is a personality, is a drama, like... Deisha wrote that, like, oh, Syndergaard's a troublemaker. No, he's not. I'm so tired of that reputation.
He's not a problem in the clubhouse. He just doesn't like ownership.
Even if he does have a little bit of attitude, it's also, like, well within the standard range of just about any young pitcher's attitude. Like, yeah, he's outspoken and...
Particular.
Yeah, but also, like, in a relatively normal way.
Yeah,
I feel like there's big drama in other ways that he dodges completely.
Yeah, it's not like he's just being difficult to be difficult. Like, he wants to perform well. Is that such a bad thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, but
like, go stop the presses. A pitcher has an ego. Oh, dear.
Yeah, oh, no. Shocker.
Yeah.
Like, no other pitcher in the entire major league has an ego.
Yeah, right. And no other pitcher in the entire major leagues has ever wanted a personal catcher in the history of the major leagues. But yeah, I mean, I do think that the Mets, they're in an interesting position because they are an up-and-coming team. They do have the potential to do something great with this group, but they may need a more steady hand than that of Mickey Callaway to guide them there. And I don't know, but this discussion all comes in an era in baseball, and maybe we can get into this at length in another pod, but it comes at an era when the, you know, importance of the manager in general is being questioned more and more often. Like, how much does it really matter who the manager is anymore when we have analytics, when we could just, like, plug formula into computer, spit out lineup? Like,
well, as we saw with the Dodgers, the manager is kind of important.
But the problem is, like, Dave Ross, but the thing is like, the other side of that coin is
but
that,
a four-year-old could have made the right call there.
Yeah, right? It was a terrible call, and I'm not trying to play devil's advocate on the call itself. The call was terrible. It's indefensible. But the other side of the coin, though, is that Dave Roberts is considered, like, a top three manager in baseball, and he made that terrible call. Like, there are no good managers.
Yeah.
If the Dodgers do fire Roberts, do you want him? I want him. I mean, yes. I think it was a terrible, terrible call, and I don't think he's coming
never
here
do
no
that
what,
again.
But yeah, he's real good.
Yes. If the Dodgers do rage fire Roberts, sign me up immediately. Yes, absolutely.
It'll be interesting. That's a tough mistake to come back from.
It is. And twice, too. Not only going to Kershaw, but leaving Kelly in.
Oh, yeah. That was...
There was just one bad decision snowballing on top of each other.
Very bad.
I'm glad I slept through the whole thing.
Yeah, this is why I'm not watching the playoffs.
Yeah.
What playoffs? The playoffs are over. They suck now.
They're awful.
I feel like that is a good transition into what we're going to talk about in the next segment. But first, we are going to take a break. But when we get back, we are going to talk about a couple of reasons why the playoffs do suck now. So stay tuned for that. And we are back. So obviously the postseason this year has had, you know, everything that a lot of other postseasons have had. Teams that have rolled over other teams with curses, like the Yankees and the Twins. Really exciting divisional series so far that have gone to five games in three out of the four instances. And, you know, like, big moments, et cetera, et cetera. But there are things other than poor managerial choices and other than teams we don't like being in the playoffs, which is, like, an entirely different thing. There are things that, you know, kind of taint the experience, and one of them has come up in a big way in the baseball world during this divisional series, which is, you know, the Braves' tomahawk chop. So I figured we would talk about that. And it's interesting that, you know, I think it took this discourse to another level because obviously the chop has existed for a long time. The Braves have made the playoffs other years. The Braves made the playoffs last year. And this wasn't talked about, you know, as extensively as it has been talked about this postseason. But this time, I think what the big difference is that a player has spoken out, which we've talked about this on the podcast before as it relates to domestic violence and other things. When the players speak out, it matters. They have a platform, and if they use it to make change, then sometimes change can actually happen. So this postseason, a pitcher on the Cardinals named Ryan Helsley was brave enough to speak out against the tomahawk chop. He is part Cherokee. His grandfather is full-blooded Cherokee. And he basically said that he thinks that the chop and things like it are a misrepresentation of the Cherokee people and Native Americans in general. He said it depicts them as caveman-type people who aren't intellectual. They are a lot more than that. It's not me being offended by the whole mascot thing. It's not. It's the misconception of us Native Americans, and it devalues us and how we're perceived that way or used as mascots, the Redskins and stuff like that. That's the disappointing part, is what he said in part. And in the aftermath of him saying that, the Braves kind of responded, but like in a
one really of the most head scratching responses in some time.
It's just, it was like a half-hearted attempt of appeasement, basically.
It was awful. I am going to read the Braves statement they released word for word, just because you need to hear it in its full glory. Glory is not a phrase that I use sarcastically here, but I'll read the entire thing. Out of respect for the concerns expressed by Mr. Helsley, we will take several efforts to reduce the tomahawk chop during our in-ballpark presentation today. Among other things, these steps include not distributing foam tomahawks to each seat and not playing the accompanying music or using chop-related graphics when Mr. Helsley is in the game. As stated earlier, we will continue to evaluate how we activate elements of our brand as well as the overall in-game experience. We look forward to a continued dialogue with those in the Native American community after the postseason concludes. There's a lot to digest there.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we'll only not do it when Helsley is in the game. Like, he's still in the stadium. He's not right? only...
And that's what's so...
He's not
I
only
mean,
Cherokee when he's pitching.
If they were like, we disagree. We think the chop is super excellent and we're going to do it forever. Like, okay, they'd be wrong, but there's at least some sort of internal logic there. But this idea that the chop is somehow offensive enough to be not appropriate when a player is on the mound, but is appropriate if the player is in the bullpen. Like, it just, there's no, it's like they're trying to offer like some little crumbs without ever having to actually own up to the fact that it's, I mean, deeply offensive. And it makes them look really half-assed in every way.
Yeah. It's just like the cognitive dissonance to say, huh? Yeah. Maybe this is bad. We'll only do the racism sometimes. It's like,
yeah.
What?
Let's do 50% less racism. Like, actually, no, it's like, let's do 20% less racism.
It's like, the idea is like, don't do the racism like, at all.
And also what was mind blowing was after like you were down 10-0 after the first inning, and they still played the chop.
They played the chop.
Like, how sad and pathetic are you? Oh, I'm totally going to get tweets after I just said that. But still.
Like, oh my God. And the thing about the I think the line that got me even more than like, I mean, all of it is bad, right? Like, we're going to do the racism only sometimes. Also, not when the Native American guy is in the game, but he's still in the stadium. It's like all of that is just like, what the actual hell? But the thing that got me for some reason the most is we will continue to evaluate how we activate elements of our brand.
Our brand.
So, like,
their brand is racism.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like we acknowledge that this thing is kind of offensive, but we're still calling it part of our brand. So you're admitting that part of your brand is racism. Like, straight up admitting it.
Openly, yeah.
And it's just like, so you know that the brand is racist, but you're like, but it's the brand. And you're like, what?
Well, the thing is, like, they don't even have to, like, ban it. They don't have to ban the chop. They don't have to, like, come out in a strongly worded statement against the chop. All they have to do is not push the button that starts playing the chop. Like, sure, some fans will do it on their own, but most of us sitting there in the stadium are not, you know, really like gung-ho planning ahead sort of cheerers. We're, you know, people tend to follow along with what's happening around them. And if they just like, just led the chop like half as often during the game and then another half and another half, you know, eventually they're doing like one chop a game, and then you just stop doing it, and people would barely notice.
Yeah, just let it slowly die. It's not hard. It's not hard. You just don't actively encourage it, and then, like, eventually fans will forget. Like, it's funny because the, like, I will never understand the, like, staunch dedication some of these fans have. Like, I need, like, a Braves fan who isn't, like a caricature of what I think these people are, like an actual, rational, like, real-life Braves fan. I need them
One of those, but even him, you start talking about the chop, and he went a little, like, he knew that it was racist, he knew it was bad, but he would still end up defending it a lot of the time, and it just, there's something about that freaking chop, man.
God. Now they're so bad. They're like, that's the reason why we lost. Like, no, you lost because your pitcher gave up 10 runs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, sure, buds, that's why you lost.
Yeah, right. You lost because you couldn't do the chop. Like, I don't get
and
it. They still did it. Yeah, that's right. I need someone to explain to me, like, why it matters so much to you. Like, I don't think, like, I'm trying to think of a comparative Mets thing that if you took it from me, it would, like, ruin everything. Like, I'm pretty sure even
Mets,
if...
maybe?
What?
Beat the Mets, maybe?
Maybe, but they've changed that song.
Yeah.
Several times. And no one cared.
No.
Like, I guess if you, like...
The home run apple, maybe?
Maybe. But it wasn't in City Field at first.
There's definitely some kind of, like, reflexive, like, the toddler being told you can't have that, and they weren't really even thinking about it before, and now they really want it.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. You have that
feeling of just, like, just, you know, just wanting to have what you want just because.
Yeah.
And it's like, God forbid you come up with something new and unique and fun to be your brand as opposed to racism. Like, I feel like even if the Mets, I mean, it would stink because of, like, jerseys and everything, but, like, even if the Mets changed the name of their franchise and kept everything else the same, like, the colors, the, like, most of the stuff, if they just changed their name to something else, like, would my heart be ripped out of my chest? No, I don't think it would be.
It's the same team.
It's the same team. Like what, why is the chop so integral to your, like, identity? I will never get it. I won't.
Well, and I think the Kansas City Chiefs do it too. So it's not like they claim ownership on this original idea that's theirs.
And the
it's
Seminoles,
not yours.
Also.
Yes, and the Seminoles. So it's not yours. It's not like, I guess they can identify it as a Braves thing, but it's still not original.
Yeah. Get rid of all this Native American imagery as mascots and chants and stuff. Like, it's very easy to just not have your team named after that. Like, there's so many things.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah.
Look at me. Look, I'm not naming a team after a group of human beings. Wow. Yeah. How about that?
Very easy. Hmm.
Well, and also along those same lines, can we talk about the Yankees calling themselves the Savages?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's been special.
Like, because that's really bad.
As if I need another reason to hate them.
And, like, they're making t-shirts and stuff out of this.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, do you realize the negative connotations with that word?
No, they don't.
No, they don't. I mean, that's just it. They don't have to be paying attention to something outside themselves.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Shock. And it's not, the world doesn't revolve around the Yankees.
Yeah, Brett Gardner thinks it's, like, cool to, like, throw a temper tantrum in the dugout and slam your bat on the ceiling. He thinks that's, like, that's part of their brand now.
That's their charm. Throwing temper tantrums is their charm.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
And destroying private property.
Yeah. And it's, like, stuff like that, like, stuff like this chop discourse and the Braves doing such, like, a half-assed job at it. Like, kind of taints the playoffs for me. Like, I mean,
there's nobody likable.
Obviously, well, I was never gonna root for the Braves to begin with, but, like, it's just not fun to even, like, watch the game at all.
I'm actually pretty happy that they got eliminated. I felt like that was an appropriate coda to the whole story as far as I was concerned.
Oh yeah, I was like, hell yeah, karma.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, am I rooting for the Cardinals?
I know.
Because they sound like the Cardinals have a great history, especially with the way they treated Dexter Fowler.
Yeah. I think I forget who tweeted it. It might have been Bradford, actually.
It was Bradford.
Who was like, it's very hard to out-racism the Cardinals.
Yeah, that tweet made my day.
Yeah, that was a good tweet.
The tweet of 2019 right there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so yeah, Cardinals definitely not, still not a likable franchise to me, but like, I guess.
Well, and also Jack Flaherty kind of was implying a little racism, maybe, when he was like, oh, Acuna, like, his antics or whatever.
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of that shit, too.
Like, he was like, oh, yeah, he didn't run and only got a single. Well, guess what? That helped your team, so why are you complaining about it?
Yeah. And also, like, Yadier Molina and Carlos Martinez got, like, big mad about, like, celebrations, but then, like, they celebrated, too, so it's like, mm-hmm. Can you not, like, can we? I thought we were, like, not I thought we were over it, but, like, I kind of thought we were over that stuff, like, in the playoffs.
Like, yeah, like, Carlos, was it Carlos Martinez who blew a kiss to, like, Billy yes. Hamilton on the Bates pants?
Sure did.
Like, very you did weird. That, but you...
I mean, like, that's also good to do that. It I mean, is, it's fun, but don't...
But he's the one who openly complained
all
about
right, but then don't, like, exactly. Then don't turn around and be a big ol' hypocrite about it.
Right, exactly. So the other thing that's kind of tainting the playoffs right now, that, you know, we're going to bring up again because, you know, it comes up, is that, you know, there are teams in this playoffs that are still benefiting from players that have had domestic violence charges against them in the past, which include the Yankees. So they have Aroldis Chapman, and they have Gleyber Torres, who obviously through no fault of his own, not blaming Gleyber Torres for this. I got into an argument with people on Twitter about this who were like, you're blaming Gleyber Torres. You know, it's not his fault. Yes, I know it's not his fault. But the team is still benefiting from his services, and he's only on the Yankees because they acquired Aroldis Chapman for pennies on the dollar because he had a domestic violence charge, and then they flipped him to a desperate Cubs team who traded them Gleyber Torres. And I mean, I think that, you know, talk to Cubs fans and they'll say they would do it again because it did help them win the World Series, which, you know, that's its own thing. But they're currently benefiting from both Chapman and Torres' services, and the Astros still have Roberto Osuna on their team, and there have already been more redemption arc articles just this postseason about mm-hmm. Roberto Osuna.
The redemption arc stuff is, I mean, it's all awful. So much of this is just terrible, but it's this, this idea that you can make up for having seriously hurt people by winning a baseball game is just so deeply problematic.
Right. And it's not even like Roberto Osuna has actually done anything redemptive at all.
No.
Like, he's not even, like, been very apologetic, period. He basically, like, thinks he did nothing wrong still. Like, he's very, like, I didn't do anything wrong, I'm trying to move past it, sort of thing. And yet he's still getting these articles written about him.
But, like, can I be the best damn librarian ever and then just go, like, punch somebody? Like, wait, I'm still good at my job, so that means I get a redemption article, even though I punched somebody in the face. Like,
how many people are bazillionaires because of your job?
Well,
I mean, probably a lot of people because they learn to read.
Yes, I was going to say, at least I'm doing a public service.
But maybe bazillionaires is not. But they should be. Damn it, your job is very important.
Yeah, I'm trying to help. But, like, I don't get, like, just because you're good at something, like, why does that just overrule everything else? I guess because I'm not a man, I don't understand this perspective. Is that what it is?
I mean, like, there definitely seems to be the feeling of, like, these guys are all on, you know, the same metaphorical team. Like, that when they look at this situation, they see the abuser and the target, and the person they identify with is the abuser.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem with how we are teaching our kids to empathize. That to me seems like something that maybe we should work on as a human race.
As a society.
And it seems like it's more of like an us versus them kind of thing. Like, oh, you don't like Azuna, you're coming for us. Like you identify as a Houston Astral. Like, every fan says we when you had absolutely nothing to do with the 25 players on the team. Like, oh yeah, we won, woo! But so identifying that closely with something, I guess you can't disassociate from both the good and the bad. So, yeah, so anybody who attacks Ozuna, I guess you feel is a personal attack on yourself.
Yeah.
But you should say, like, there should be lines, though. You should be able to see domestic violence is wrong, and you can call it out with it without saying that it's a personal attack on you and your fandom.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, on that note, we kind of got an email about this recently that we kind of wanted to respond to because it's relevant to this discussion. So this email's from Tom. Thanks, Tom, for sending the email in. He first thanked us for, you know, bringing up domestic violence on the podcast and talking about it. But he said, one thing that niggles my mind, though, is due process. I totally see that there are incentives for victims and systems not to prosecute, and that doesn't make anyone innocent. But I am not really comfortable with guilt by public acclaim and much less comfortable with outsourced punishment. If I work at a Starbucks and I think OJ Simpson did it, should I refuse him a cup of coffee? So this concept comes up a lot when we talk about, when people talk about domestic violence and, you know, players and like being suspended and or calls for them to be removed from baseball entirely. People talk about, like, due process, innocent until proven guilty. But I think, like, what these people miss when they say these things is that baseball is not a court of law. And no one is taking away Roberto Osuna's due process. Like, if there is sufficient evidence that he committed a crime, he will go to jail, hopefully. But, you know, I don't trust the justice system as much as some of these people do, maybe. But if there is not sufficient evidence that he did a crime, or, you know, witnesses stop cooperating with an investigation for their own personal reasons, then he won't go to jail. And I don't think anyone is saying that that is bad or wrong or the incorrect course of action. What people are talking about is baseball, which is different.
Well, I think it also, it misses that, like, not all consequences for immoral actions are legal consequences. What we're talking about are social consequences, and people have social consequences for their actions all the time. So, I mean, Colin Kaepernick is currently experiencing social consequences for his actions, which were perceived by some to be immoral. Now, he did something as terrible as taking a knee. He didn't, you know, just beat his wife or whatever. Like, he would still have a job if he did. But, you know, it's not like this is some kind of special case. Like, it's not like we're only saying, oh, well, there should be social consequences when somebody, you know, commits an act of domestic violence. There are social consequences all the time. And, you know, the fact that I think part of the problem is that for so long there have been no social consequences of any kind for domestic violence, like none at all. It is only even recently that, like, it stopped being basically a joke. And even in some circles, it still is kind of a joke. But yeah, I think, like, if your buddy, you know, puts his wife in the hospital, do you still want to go out and hang out with that person every day? I mean, if you do, that's kind of its own situation. But if you don't, you don't have to go and hang out with your buddy who beat up his wife. You could just not do that. You could go spend your time with people who don't beat up their wives. Like, it's And that's a social consequence. That is a very close relation of what we're talking about.
And also, you signed a contract to play Major League Baseball. Like, you're their employee. If I drove drunk to work or if I was drunk at work, my job could suspend me. No questions asked. If your job perceives you to do something wrong and wants to punish you for it, they're absolutely within their rights to do it. Like, that's why you've signed a contract with them. So, and like, you know, if I was drunk at work, I might not get arrested, but my job can absolutely is well within their rights to punish me. So there is, but like you said, there's social consequences. There's consequences as an employee. Like, it's not just a legal matter that we're talking about.
Right. And like, and it all comes back to, you know, the concept that these men's lives are being ruined by, you know, just facing some level of accountability for what they've done. When playing baseball and being adored by millions of fans and making millions of dollars is a privilege. It is not a right. Like, due process is a right that we all are able to enjoy in a society. But being famous, celebrity, adoration, those things are not rights. And yeah, they can be taken away when you do something shitty.
And you won't see me here saying like, oh, well, you know, even though they couldn't get anyone to testify, they should just throw Jose Reyes into jail anyway. Like, none of us would ever say that. Like, due process is important, as frustrating and upsetting as it is that so many people who do this have no consequences at all. Like, nobody is saying that the answer is that due process should cease to exist. It's just that this is an area in which the legal process is not as foolproof as we might like it to be. So we need to find other disincentives outside of that system. And that's not, you know, that's not an aberration, because again, there are non-legal consequences that we use all the time. But like, we should do that. We should do that with this. We do it with so many other things. Man, if only Robert Ozuna would take a knee during the national anthem, then we wouldn't be having this conversation, because he'd be out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
And also, it's not just that, you know, we want them punished, but like, obviously, that would be nice. But you don't need to go in the other direction too. Like, Ozuna benefited from his suspension. He got to go from the Blue Jays to a team that's always going to be in the hunt for the World Series. You think he's upset he's no longer on the Blue Jays?
Yeah, like, got Jose Reyes out of Colorado too.
Yeah, where he hated it. The Yankees benefited. The Astros benefited. Like, it's not just that there's no consequences. It's that you're making it worse. You're kind of incentivizing domestic violence, because it's working so far for these teams to capitalize on these suspensions. And so by not having any consequences of any sort, I mean, I guess maybe even the consequences led directly, like the impending Chapman suspension is what led to everything to begin with. So even the consequences that we ask for aren't working, and it doesn't seem like baseball wants to figure out a solution for it.
At least in the case of Domingo Germán, another player on the Yankees, as it turns out, the cynical side of me says that this is only true because of the timing of it, because it happened very shortly before the postseason. But unlike previous, you know, people who committed these offenses, he was not put on the postseason roster and was not eligible for the postseason. Whereas, you know, that being eligible for the postseason despite a domestic violence suspension is what drives a lot of this. It's what drove the Ozuna situation and the Chapman situation. Because otherwise they wouldn't be, you know, as valuable as, quote, trade commodities as they were. So, you know, at least Domingo Herman was not able to participate in the postseason. But it remains to be seen whether this is, you know, a step toward taking these things more seriously and disincentivizing, you know, these players becoming trade chips, or whether it's just because of the timing of it.
I mean, certainly that would be a simple and helpful step for MLB to take.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it should have been done way before this. Yeah, it should have been done as soon as the Ozuna deal went down, because people were crying for it then. They were begging for it, and MLB had all offseason to look into that, to figure it out, and not once did I hear anything about it. They were more concerned with pace of play and the DH coming to the National League. Like,
yeah, where's all that pace of play talk getting them?
Mm-hmm.
The last games have been like 8 hours long.
Yeah, good job. Good job, Manfred.
Next game's going to be as long as Joe Girardi's job interview.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, before we finish up with emails, I did want to briefly respond to one more email that we got from Howard, just thanking us for all the podcasts from throughout the year, saying that we're great Mets fans and he enjoys our insights. And he appreciates that we're all very consistent in ripping players for unacceptable off-field behavior. So we just did that in this show. So, and I hope you continue to highlight those issues. But he asks that we do not forget to continue to rip the Wilpons at every chance we get, because he says spending is clearly not commensurate with teams' revenues. They would rather put money in their pockets than help the team, but they spend just short of tanking. Because he acknowledges this was in the immediate aftermath of the podcast where we ranted about tanking. He also said that he hates tanking, and tanking equals losing equals money in owners' pockets. And he wanted to make sure that we, you know, rip the Wilpons for not spending enough too. Trust us, Howard, we will keep doing that. And I'm sure in the off season we will have ample opportunities to do that when they do not sign Garrett Cole and do not, you know, take the steps they need to take to improve their bullpen fully.
Prove us wrong.
Yeah.
Please do. We would love it.
Shut us up.
We're really close to something great, and if the Wilpons open up their wallets just a little tiny bit this offseason, I think that the Mets could be a competitive team. So
yeah. I will happily eat crow on that one.
Exactly. So thank you for the email, Howard. We appreciate it. We always appreciate all your emails. Send us more emails, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. We will read them on the podcast sometimes, probably more often during the offseason, because we'll be looking for things to talk about. That is our show for this week. We will wrap things up like we always do with walk-off wins, so stay tuned for that. And we are back. So we will finish out the show this week like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is, well, I'm kind of cheating a little bit because at the time of recording, it has not yet actually happened, but by the time this posts, it will have happened, and that is that we're going to visit my mom in Connecticut this weekend, and we're going to go apple picking and just get, like, pumpkins for the kids to make jack-o'-lanterns, and it's just going to be a, like, autumn wonderland in Connecticut, and, you know, my mom is, like, this just, like, amazing grandma mother of mine who, like, you know, cooks with the kids and is, like, always having fun and playing with them. And then we're going to hang with my dad at this little, totally adorable old school fast food restaurant called Red Rooster. Like, it's just going to be a really lovely weekend. And I am very excited to kind of break away from the city and chill out in that country life for a while.
Yeah, I'm going this weekend because for those of you who have, you know, off on Monday because it's Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day, as I would prefer we celebrate. I am taking that 3-day weekend, and my family and I are going up to Vermont to see my brother. So I will be in New England and looking at leaves, and it's going to be fantastic. And we're going to go on a hike, and we're going to go to Citizen Cider, and we're going to go to lovely restaurants in Stowe, Vermont, and it's going to be beautiful. So I'm very excited for that too.
And I'm going in the opposite direction. I'm going to Florida this weekend.
Very nice. Getting away from the cooler weather to hang on to summer just a little bit longer.
It's in the 80s down there, so it will be summery.
Sounds good to me.
Linda, what is your walk-off?
I'm cold all the time.
Right? Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is actually from Monday. It was my niece's 6th birthday, so happy birthday, Emily.
Yay!
She's a big first grader now. Aww. And when she was born, I had a different job. And where I work now is about a couple blocks down the road from the hospital where she was born. So even just driving to work on Monday, I was like, I was driving the same exact path to the hospital 6 years ago to visit her for the first time. And it was just, it just brought back memories. Like, it was the same road, the same trees, the same, you know, the leaves were changing colors, and it just brought everything back. Like, because that was the first time I became an aunt. So just seeing how little she was and just remembering, you know, the nurses wheeling her in and her little bassinet and, you know, just the whole experience of becoming an aunt for the first time, and just to see her now and like how silly and sassy and funny she is, and to see her like blossom in school, and she's doing dance, and she got to meet the Rockettes, and so it's just been fun to see her grow up so far, and I can't wait to continue to see her grow and to see the young lady she would become. So happy birthday, Emily. Aunt Linda loves you, and many, many happy birthdays to come.
Happy birthday, Emily. I am biased because I think October babies are the best.
Yes.
Personally.
Gee, I wonder why.
So my walk-off win for this week is that I had a really, really nice weekend last weekend in New York City. The highlight of which will be of interest to the listeners of this podcast, I am sure. And those of you who follow me on Twitter already know about this, but I did it. I got a Mets tattoo. So I've been wanting this tattoo for a really, really long time. I got the home run apple tattooed on my right shoulder. I've been wanting it for ages, but I didn't have enough money because I was still a really broke grad student. And so I wanted to get to a place financially where I could afford it. And so it was kind of my my PhD graduation gift to myself, very belatedly, but I needed the time to save up the money, like I said. So I graduated my PhD in February, and this was kind of my gift to myself. My tattoos have come at like kind of like major milestone points in my life, and I kind of like treat myself with getting, you know, new ink. So the very first one I got when I like started college, and then the second one I got after I passed my comprehensive exam in grad school, which is like the first big hurdle, and then obviously the second big hurdle is handing in your dissertation. So this is kind of my like ink to celebrate that. And I feel like I got the ink at a good time, because you can't say I'm like a bandwagoner, because it's not like I got it like right after the Mets won the World Series or something like that. You know, I'm freaking dedicated. So that was really nice. I just want to give a shout out to my artist, Galen Bryce at Triple Diamond Tattoo in Brooklyn. He did an amazing job with this tattoo. I could not be happier with it. Currently, it's like pretty ugly because it's flaking and healing and all the skin is all gross. But I know that once it heals, it will be so, so awesome. He stayed after the shop closed just to make sure everything was perfect. He kept tattooing me. All the other artists left, the like front desk person left, like everyone was gone besides him and me and Michael. sitting there tattooing me still, like getting close to 9 p.m. So he's a champion. The tattoo looks fabulous. So shout out to Galen. Thank you so much for a wonderful piece that I'm going to take with me for my whole life to celebrate this thing, this stupid baseball team that is incredibly important to me. And shout out to Michael for sitting for 3 hours and holding my hand the whole time.
How do you sit still?
It's not easy.
No.
It's not easy. I actually started in like a, like, so it's on like the back of my shoulder. So the, for the line work, I was sitting up, but I kind of had a cushion that I had my arms on and I was like leaning forward. But then like, he was like, all right, we'll do the line work and then we'll take a break and then we'll do the coloring. So we did the line work and then like, he was like, how you doing? And I was like, I'm okay, but my lower back hurts so much from like not moving in that position. And he was like, do you want me to bring out the like table so you can like lay down? And I was like, yes. So for the like last 2/3 of it, I like the like hour one, I was like sitting up, but leaning forward and my back was killing me. And I was like, that's how I know I'm old now. And then like for the second and third hour, I was laying like on my stomach, like flat, which was a lot better. I had to like, what I did was, is I like tucked my arm underneath my body and it did eventually fall asleep, but it was so that my arm wouldn't twitch. So I didn't want to move. So I was like, I got to trap it with the weight of my body so that I don't like mess it up. But yeah,
it turned out awesome.
It did.
Thanks. Yeah, it's not easy not moving for that long and when you're in pain too, because your body's like natural instinct is to flee, and so like the needle touches you and you're like, you like have to not twitch.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, how do you not flinch?
It's been a very long time since I got my tattoo, but I think it's because it wasn't really like a sharp, like a jabbing sudden pain. It's more like a it doesn't feel great sort of pain, you know?
Yeah.
So there's no shock moment of like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, I don't like that.
Yeah, like maybe the very first line they draw is like, but then like after that you like know it's coming. So it's kind of like, you know, it's not that bad. I describe it to people like the line work is kind of like, it's like a cat scratching you, kind of.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, okay.
I've been
scratched by many cats, so I know what that is.
I described it kind of felt like going over and over the same spot with like a nail file.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The coloring part, I tell people like that it feels like if your skin is sensitive or like you have like a sunburn or like there's an area of your skin that's like kind of like not feeling great and you rub it with like sandpaper, that's kind of what it feels like.
It's not good. It's not like pleasant. I'm not signing up for this, but it's also like, it's if it was literally just like being feeling like it was stabbed with a needle over and over again, then I wouldn't have done it at all. Like that.
Yeah,
but it is a different sort of discomfort
for sure. I always said if the Mets win the World Series, I would get a tattoo of feathers for Hope is the Thing of Feathers, the Perches in the Soul, because obviously it's literary.
Yes.
So I would get like either feathers or a bird or something, but I think I'm too much of a wimp.
if you need moral support, I'll come with you.
Okay. But it might be when I'm like 85 that this might happen.
We'll still be doing this podcast when we're 85 and I'll come with you.
Our like 5,000th episode, Linda gets tattooed.
Live.
I think if we do 5,000 episodes, you should get tattooed no matter what the Mets do.
Exactly. Damn right.
That's true. That's a lot of like Mets talk after 5,000 episodes. I would have earned it by then.
Yeah. For sure.
That's almost as many episodes as Joe Girardi recorded with the Cubs.
Ah, boom.
Full circle.
Full circle. Yeah, so it's just It was just a nice weekend in New York. Like, other than obviously I got the tattoo, that was like the big thing. But I got to see my friend Kathy just moved to the city, my best friend from college. So I got to, you know, see her and hang out with her and my other really close friend Sarah. The three of us hung out and we went and got drinks on Saturday night and like in the city, and we spent the whole day together, wandered around Central Park, and that was really fun. And then we went out for drinks, and we ended up late in the night. We ended up at a drag show. Not intentionally, but we ended up at a drag show and had a rip-roaring good time. It was freaking awesome. Like, they worked it, and I had such a good time.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. We just ended up back in the Village, because that's where I was staying, because that's where Michael's sister lives, and I was staying with them. And we ended up back at the Village at the end of the night, and we just walked by this bar, and we were like, let's go in. Like, seems cool. Seems like it's hopping in there. We, like, walk in, and we're like, there's a drag show right now. Heck yeah! And so we just stayed, and it was great. So, lots of fun. Really good weekend. Yep, it was great. And I got to see the Brooklyn Bridge with my eyeballs for the first time, which makes another thing that, like, never been to the Statue of Liberty. Like, I've also never seen the Brooklyn Bridge. Like, I've seen it from, like, afar when I've been, like, in the city, but I've never, like, because I was in Brooklyn when I got my tattoo, because that's where the studio was, and I was like, maybe I should, like, look at the Brooklyn Bridge with my eyes. So I did that. We took pictures and, you know, did the whole Brooklyn Bridge thing. We wandered around the, like, the open air market in Brooklyn, the smorgasbord. Just a great weekend. Really good weekend. So that does it for our show this week. You will be hearing from us, like we said, last episode, you'll be hearing from us every other week during the off season. So you'll hear from us this week. We'll be off, and then you'll hear from us the week after. So that's kind of what the schedule is going to be like during the off season. We have a lot of interviews planned with lots of fun guests for you guys. We also might do book club stuff, so stay tuned for that. If you have suggestions for baseball books that we should read for like a podcast book club sort of off season situation, email the show aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com or tweet at us @apodoftheirown. You can follow the show on Twitter. In the meantime, please go to AmazingAvenue.com, read all of our fantastic content. We still have the season review series that's happening right now, where we're going through each Mets season and reviewing how their performance went. I will have overall season review meters going up soon. I've been slacking off doing that. I need to do that. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com. You can read all of the season reviews. Follow along. We put up postseason game threads for every single postseason game, so if you're watching the postseason and want to chat with us about it, come chat with us.
And if you're not watching the postseason, we don't blame you.
Yeah, no, seriously. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @AmazingAvenue. You can follow the show on Twitter, like I said, @apodoftheirown. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am @PetitePhD. Where are you, Linda?
@LindaServage.
And you, Maggie?
@Maggie162.
Follow each of us on Twitter. Follow the show on Twitter. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android apps, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original music for this podcast, the intro and the outro to this show, is by Bunga. Let's go, Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in Bunga.